with Christine. Sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. Welcome to episode 51 with Maggie Anderson from Grace Club. Hi, Maggie. How are you?
Hi, Christine. Really good. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, me too. We're both cozied up on the couch Saturday morning.
So cozy. I love that 1:30 is morning right now, but it is.
It's very I came home at 5 a.m. Yeah, so this is morning.
Fair enough.
Yesterday, our lunch was scheduled for 6:30 p.m.
Yeah,
on set.
So set life. I get it.
Pardon my jet lag.
No sweat. I know. Conversations should be interesting, too, like on sleep deprivation. It always adds that, like, we may or may not be stoners right now, and that'd be fine.
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah.
I've made more sense hammered and tired than sober, so you never know. So to give a bit of background, Maggie and I met a couple weeks ago through Julia, who you guys have heard on another episode about abortion. She had reached out to you guys previously, and then Julia and I are thinking of throwing some awesome women with an X centric events in Vancouver, and then we reached out to you and we're like, let's all hang out.
We should obviously know each other. That was the takeaway. Why don't we know them?
Right. And obviously we got along and I was like, I feel like we should talk.
We love conversation.
Yes.
That's the deal.
Yeah. So Maggie runs Grace Club. Do you want to define it? Because I find it hard to sum up.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I get tripped up all the time when I talk about it, so I'll just try to speak from the heart about what Grace Club is. We started, one of my really, really good friends, Tavia Cosper, and I, we started with an idea that it was kind of during the whole amping up of the Trump administration, like the Trump campaign, I should say, prior to the election. And we started realizing that we weren't where we thought we were politically, climate-wise, and also just kind of looking around at the reactions of what was happening and how no one really knew what to do about how we were all just kind of waking up to, like, oh, we thought, because of our privilege, we thought we were in a way more progressive place than we clearly are. Yeah. So we wanted to gather. And the Women's March was a really, really inspiring event and experience. And it wasn't enough. It wasn't like something that we were prepared to walk away from.
I feel better now.
Yeah, like see you next year. It was a high. I remember a physical feeling of being there listening to the speakers and feeling like I was levitating off the ground.
Yeah.
That's how powerful it felt to be a part of a movement that seemed very clear to me all of a sudden that it was desperately needed. Mm-hmm. And so my immediate reaction was like, how can we contribute to this?
Mm-hmm.
And so looking around, knew a lot of really rad women.
Yeah.
And noticed that we wanted to gather. We wanted to have conversations. We wanted to help further learning and awareness and activism. And we just thought, well, we'll start a gathering. So we called it a social club. And then immediately upon hearing that, we're like, club all right away to us sounds exclusive.
Yeah.
So we call ourselves the anti-club. And anyone who anyone who showed up was instantly a member, whether they you know, were there physically or they were online with us. We wanted to curate evenings that would bring in different speakers to talk on, united kind of, universal themes.
Yeah.
Raise money for local organizations that don't have highly funded campaigns and aren't as visible, but people that are really on the ground, doing the hard work in this city for marginalized communities. And at the same time, just like organically network with really cool, warm, inviting people that are ready to have important conversations.
Yeah.
And so I'm personally allergic to small talk. I find it really challenging to find a connection that way.
Yeah.
And I also never saw myself in any of the women's events that I was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping in mind, I'm not part of the academic community. I know there's a lot of really good shit that goes on through the universities and financial... academic, learning institutions. But I wasn't, that wasn't part of my world. So what I did see seemed like it was geared towards female entrepreneurs, how to be the quote unquote successful woman, a lot of like,
corporate leadership, essentially.
Corporate leadership, and also like, maybe something around the fashion world and like something that felt too glamorous for me.
Yeah.
And also I'd never identified with the picture of a successful woman. I was kind of like doop-de-doo, a regular person making my way through life. So I didn't feel called to go mm-hmm. out and do these, to go to these type of events until we legit just started our own. And clearly it was something that resonated.
Yeah.
People started showing up. We started inviting people that we didn't know to speak. We started getting, because of that, we got different people coming in the doors.
Yeah.
We always move around. We work out of donated spaces that are historically women owned and run businesses, mm-hmm. but not exclusive to that. We've just been able to do that so far. People have been really generous. And that way we bring, 60 to 80 women through somebody's business, and they get to highlight what they do. It's great exposure for them. And we get a free space where instead of paying for a space, we can donate to a cause.
Yeah.
Right? So it was just like kind of a win-win for everyone. And so we've been doing that now for 2 years.
That's amazing. What was the first event?
The first event was on progress, inclusion, and expression. That was the theme. And we had three speakers who just threw it out of the park. Blew it out of the park? Hit it out of the park? Something like that?
Something over the fence. Yeah.
So it was like, over the fence and nail on the head and we'll throw on all the other ones. We had Shawnee McGinnis, who's who I think is one of the best yoga instructors in the city. She's a fierce, like I would say, radical feminist. Super intellectual, and she spoke on the work that needed to be done and needs mm-hmm. to be done. And then we had Robin Edwards, who is a comedian and actress and identifies as queer. And we had Victoria, who runs Bam Pow Life, who you should definitely have on if you haven't had her.
No, I haven't.
She's a body positivity, fat activist, and kind of wellness coach outside of the stereotypical idea of wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were kind of talking about all the things that seemed really, exciting and current. As we started to get going with it, what we realized is because we were organically networking and it wasn't something that was like, we weren't advertising. We were going like from within our bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver, it is not the most easiest to penetrate in terms of cliques, in terms of in terms of diversity.
Yeah.
So because of that, our lineups were really reflected in that most of the people were white, heteronormative, cisgendered women. And as we continued to kind of dig deeper into the feminist movement, we realized that was no longer okay. And that even though we have amazing women with incredible stories that have so much value and that people would really resonate with, we can't throw together events anymore that really center
around the same bubble,
white folks, or the same
privilege,
visible diversity. Is one thing. There's also invisible diversity, but either way we need to hear from more perspectives, more voices, and we really need to represent that. That's the evolution of Grace Club over the last couple of years. We've also, keeping in mind, it's not just about inviting women of color, black and indigenous particularly. It's also about people with disabilities. It's also about, we've just recently included men into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If they're feminist, if they're really wanting to learn and be included, we'll find ways to make that happen. But the idea is like you can only preach to the choir for so long until it's not making
it doesn't
of an impact.
Change anything. Yeah. No, you're like, oh, we all agree, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we also realize like Grace Club is, we are maybe a comfortable place for the average person just starting to delve into feminism,
mm-hmm.
whereas some of the activists out there might repel them because of not feeling comfortable yet or not really willing to really look at how they contribute and really
perpetuate
these systems. And so we're like not feminism 101, not feminism light. I would say we're not even white feminism, but we are trying to be as warm and inclusive mm-hmm. as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we stand for that, we also need to represent it.
Yeah.
How important it is to be intersectional in all our dealings.
All the aspects.
Yeah, and so that we don't lose people, but at the same time, so that we actually do something with this platform.
Yeah.
That makes a difference.
Absolutely.
And I do think we, you know, like any place where, any city where the, you know, diversity might not be easy peasy lemon squeezy, we have to do the work, you know, to get different perspectives included and feeling included, like feeling, really seeing themselves through Grace Club.
That, yeah.
And at the same time, just all recognize that it's a little tougher that way because it's not as, I don't know what you would call this city, metropolitan or...
Yeah.
You know, it's just, we're not quite there yet.
No, we're not.
Yeah. And some would argue not at all there yet, but...
Yeah. I think it's a difficult one, especially in Vancouver, because it's actually not a big city and it's like portraying itself as like this mecca of like culture and events and things. And it's like, no... It's very little happening.
It's just I think it's segregated is what it is.
So segregated.
I think if you spend time, you know, in communities where that culture and history is really celebrated, you're going to get a lot of that. And then you could move over here and get a lot of this. But in terms of really amalgamating and celebrating our differences as well as our similarities, I feel like we've got a lot more work to do.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of taken over my life, I gotta admit. Like, it's once you start to walk on any path that I think you realize how much still work there is to be done. It's like, well, I can't just hide my head in the sand anymore.
Just ostrich through life?
Yeah, as much as that is attractive some days. Some days I'd say I can't anymore.
But yeah, but that's... This leads me to, like, the question I was going to ask you originally is, like, it's taken over. What does your life look like? So what's your personal story?
Yeah, sure.
Before the Women's March epiphany.
Well, it's interesting. I can't really pinpoint why or when activism and also...
just, like, social consciousness.
Yeah, like, social justice and awareness has always been really important. I think it's a value in my family, in terms of how I was raised, or I know it to be true that it is. And also I'm just a natural connector.
Yeah.
That's what I'm, that's where my skills really shine. My sisters are really academic, you know, like genius level. And I was not at all, like at all.
People person.
So what else is there? Okay. Well, there's connecting with people on a humor level. I can have a really good buffer that way. And also there is like, hey, like there's this whole, the soft skills that I can really develop. And so I did. And so for me, like I've always been really inspired and motivated by human connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taught yoga for 18 years, 19 years.
Yeah.
Both in Toronto and also in Vancouver. And wellness and health has always been, you know, that's part of the industry. Yoga is part of that.
Yeah.
And so self-betterment, maybe I've always been a little bit of a junkie around like self-personal growth, all those things.
Improving.
That really do become, I think, a little bit of a trap, especially for women. And so I'm married to an amazing man, feminist, supportive, probably one of the best guys on earth. I think they're just incredible daughters. And they really are. They're really special. My daughters are 12 and 10, so we're at a really fun age where we're starting to have like big conversations and really like dig into their responsibility on this earth and also helping them process what, you know, their environment.
How they place themselves in this world.
And their relationship to what goes on and really be participators in life. But when I really, found the feminist lens as something that was healing is because I was raised in a British Catholic, my parents are descendants of the British Catholic model, the most repressed, the most, and they're lovely people, but like that culture was thick in our home. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of healing, and I always call it recovering Catholic, you know, like a lot of healing to do around my relationship with my body, specifically around, what it means to kind of move through the world as a girl.
Yeah.
I always internalized, patriarchal, values and beliefs. I internalized a lot of misogyny. Mm-hmm. And I'm a girl in a world that teaches you that we're inherently inadequate.
Lesser.
Yeah. And so I was immersed in the culture of like self-betterment, always trying to feel like I was enough.
Yeah.
And a little bit, probably I had a little bit of that perfectionism, although most people with perfectionism, it manifests as like, it's quite common to have an eating disorder. I never had that. I worked with kids with eating disorders. I definitely had the same, what you can't not have, I think, if you grow up in this environment, is like the same preoccupations with my body, but I wasn't ever restrictive with my food or anything like that. But when I found feminism, I was like, what a fucking relief. I don't have to
carry this fucking weight.
Sure. And also I can be rebellious about it. Like when I look in the mirror and I'm critical of myself, I can see that as this is part of my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Well, fuck that. Mm-hmm. And so from there, it was a really empowered way for me to also look at my roles in my marriage, my relationship with my sexuality. Like all of a sudden it was just like a paradigm
shift
for me that was really empowering. And then the other part that really appealed to me is, again, just that activism piece. Is that, like, once you have the awareness of, like, life's not equal for everyone.
How fucked up the situation is.
Yeah. Then you can really start to use your privilege for good.
Mm-hmm.
So right around the time that we started, Tavia and I started Grays Club, it was around the Me Too movement. And that was a big one for me. It was like...
Yeah.
It was the first time and this is embarrassing to say, but it was really the first time I realized I'd been a victim of sexual abuse and sexual assault. I didn't realize that experiences that I'd had as a young,
young
teenager,
girl,
were that. I just legit thought it was part of being a girl in the
world.
And
I think that's like the sad... Yeah. It's like sad for us to say, but I think that's why it is what it is, this movement.
Yeah.
Because we were just like taught that's what happens.
That's what happens.
You're a waitress. That's what happens.
Absolutely.
Your bum gets grabbed. Mm-hmm. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Minimize so much.
So much of it.
And I think that's great for survival. I mean, I don't think it's great, but I think
it
got me through.
Yeah.
And I was constantly just pulling up my bootstraps and kind of like, all right, soldier through. And it wasn't until the Me Too movement really started to surface where I realized, oh, that was called sexual assault. That is called sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I was no longer okay with just like not being a part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I could, because I noticed that. I was like, I'm
just a bystander now.
Sure. Yeah. So that was really super motivating for me. I grew up in Victoria, really great childhood.
Yeah.
I had some, you know, experiences of, like, for instance, my sister ran away when she was 16. I was 13. She lived on the streets for a year, and the only way my parents could get her back was if they agreed that her street kid friends could come with her.
Wow.
So right around that age, for me, digging into adolescence, was when I was...
I was exposed
to a whole microcosm of the world that maybe I wouldn't have been. And I'm super grateful of it because we had an open door policy. My dad built a room in the basement. You know, kids could come and go. Anyone could potentially be sitting at a dinner table, you know, with a huge mohawk and a big studded leather jacket. And some kids stayed for months, years. Some kids were just there for a few nights. Everyone was respectful and grateful for having this place. And I got to meet and interact with people that probably would have been off my radar from like a middle class.
Yeah.
You know, like
Victoria.
Yeah. And so, and my sister, my eldest sister, Cara, she's probably one of my biggest teachers in life. Like she really, from her own life experience, I've learned so, so much. And so because of that, I think I've always just kind of cared about the underdog a little bit.
Yeah.
I had friends in my youth who ended up, you know, I ran with a tough crew. We were all the like skateboard punk rock scene in Victoria. And because of that, lost a lot of friends to drugs.
Yeah.
And then more recently, I guess 5 years ago, just this year, lost my first love and best friend. He was the witness at my wedding. We were together when I was 15, 16, 17. And he committed suicide 5 years ago. So he was a huge teacher for me about mental health, mm-hmm. because how stigmatized it is. It's really easy to have a story in your head about people who suffer with mental illness.
Yeah.
He was the first one. He struggled with both mental illness and also addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, why I love and why I do what I do is because what I've realized is when you have a personal connection or context to something, you are automatically an ally for that group
yeah,
of people.
Yeah.
But you could go to a lecture and hear a whole bunch of statistics about the people on the downtown east side, for instance, struggling with drug addiction, and you might remember a statistic, but it won't be something that you you know,
are fully aware of, like in your body, and can empathize with.
Yeah, because it's not a personal connection. And so that's why I like to bring people together to hear personal stories. Like Grace Club differentiates itself that by, like, the, you know, and there are speaker series who are doing some really great stuff where you go and you learn.
Yeah.
Grace Club is like the foundation is that you are not there to teach
via
a keynote or a graph. You're there to share your lived experience, your personal connection to the theme, so that people in the room either see themselves in you and identify with it and go, wow, this person's speaking about this. Maybe this is opening a something in me. Or if they don't identify at all and it's all brand new for them, now they have a personal connection to it.
Now they
say at the dinner table, for instance, like we did one on sexuality and my friend Jess spoke about what it was like to come out as trans.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people in the room, that was their first exposure to a trans person. And then they go to Christmas dinner and fucking, you know, everybody has like a Uncle John or Bob or
some
what have
typical
you,
white guy name.
That says something, that just says something, that's offensive or just insensitive or I just don't understand how it's just not. And then now you have a bunch of people that were in that room with Jess hearing their story and realizing that like, oh, they know someone and they can break it down. Actually, I did hear from someone, you know, Uncle Blank, and I can tell you what their experience was like and demystify it a little bit for others. And in that way, not to assume, but, you know, it did start for
it's
as
a
just
start.
Just,
yeah.
Just, yeah, it started as just women. We've definitely opened it up to like women and gender non-conforming people.
Mm-hmm.
And then also our last event was all humans welcome. But the idea is like, you know, a lot of women have uteruses.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but a lot of them do. And a lot of them hope to or plan to or might just by circumstance end up becoming parents.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest way to make a change is through our youth
mm-hmm.
and in the way that we parent our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really powerful way to create like soldiers of society.
Yeah.
And so what I was hoping for is that many of those women that were in that room with Jess went home and would parent differently with less of the gender norm stereotypes and expectations on their kids
mm-hmm.
when their kids do come home from school talking about someone in their school who is trans, because it's happening. That they can really process that with their children in a way that breeds tolerance and acceptance and understanding versus like, well, I just don't even know about this.
Yeah. And like,
right?
And create trauma and shame around something just because you don't know how to talk about
100%.
It.
Which is very real. Like, if we don't understand something, we can be perpetuating the problem without knowing that we are, or we could just legit be, like, actually against something just because it's foreign to us and we don't understand it.
Yeah, just, like, the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
As, like, the... Yeah, and that's... I think that's, for me, it was also a huge realization in the storytelling part, because I get asked that question quite a bit in terms of, like, why would I write a memoir
mm-hmm.
and tell all my secrets,
mm-hmm.
you know, and have everyone know, and like what, how that's empowering or what the point is.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, for me, it's like the best conversations I've had and the best moments of learning I've had in my personal life were having those conversations with people of just like, you have that moment where you have a real and honest, truly vulnerable conversation with somebody about my or their experiences. And that's when things click or unclick or declick or reclick or whatever is happening. And like same thing for me. I met Justin, a friend of mine in university, who to this day is like my personal connection to the downtown East Side. He lived there for like over 10 years in and out of jail. Crazy addiction problem. And met his wife on the street. They ended up in jail at separate times. She came out and got clean, and she was like, you get clean or you never see me again. They both have masters in social work from UBC. Like, UBC. And they have two kids who are like, I mean, this is the future, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm, and every time I have a conversation with him, I'm like, which is super selfish and showing up my privilege, but I'm like, give me the tools. And just the way that happening to have that friend in university and having the conversations I had with him has helped me more than I even am aware of right now.
Yeah.
Like, we had to film in the downtown East Side last month or a couple months ago, and we were shooting inside an SRO, a single room occupancy.
Yeah.
And I was the only one that, for some reason, was able to get through to people that we were working with. We hired people, residents of the downtown East Side, to
probably because you saw them as people, maybe?
Because Justin told me once in the very beginning of our friendship, he said the biggest thing, because I was a student, I was broke as fuck at the time. I was like, I don't know how to help. I don't know what to do. And he was like, acknowledge people.
Yeah.
He was like, step number one.
Yeah.
Look them in the eye. Say hi, fucking acknowledge the people in front of you. And it's the personal connection that led me to that, you know,
right.
to now not make mistake 101. I'm not saying that I'm great at anything. I'm just like the first entry to like barrier to entry is open.
And I would even reframe that you are great at something, because it's not, I think when people don't understand something, they haven't walked in someone's shoes, there is fear there, right? And because of that fear, they don't see the person. They see the addiction or the mental illness or the poverty or the lifestyle. And because of the way we look at them like that, we see it's dehumanizing.
Yeah.
And so it's more common than it is not.
Yeah.
And so you do have a gift there, just in the fact that you have a personal... you have context there, and you're like, oh, yeah, people. Underneath all this, people. Somebody gave me a really good, great book after James died, and I was really struggling with, you know, that he ended his life.
Yeah.
And I wasn't being compassionate in it. I was still feeling kind of, like, selfishly, like, you're not going to be able to watch my kids grow up. And he was also, when he died, it was like the death of my youth. Like, he was a witness to my youth, and there goes my youth. And so it was like, I was really mourning in grief about that too. And then someone gave me a book by, he runs the Portland Society down in the downtown East Side. With a G.
Yes.
Anyway, it was called All the Hungry Ghosts, or In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts.
Well, look it up, and it'll be in the description, guys.
Yeah, and the first half of the book is about the downtown East Side, the characters. And he describes them physically. Then he tells you their story. You will recognize people. If you've spent any time downtown, in Gastown, and in that surrounding area, you will know who these people are, their names, too.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you have this context and background to why they ended up where they have, and what they're dealing with on a daily basis, and what they have dealt with. Holy shit.
Yeah, dude.
All of a sudden, it's like, I'll never call someone ever again. This is part of James's influence on me. It's like, when you call someone a crackhead, it seems flippant. It seems like it's not about the person, it's about the behavior and the lifestyle. Yeah. It's like, no, you've now dehumanized them. And reading that book for me was so healing, because it gives you context to, like, the fact that these people get up every day
is insane
and carry on based on their experience, their life experience. I am in awe. And the fact that James chose no longer to wake up every day and deal with the hell that was his emotional and mental inner life, I have to respect that, because I don't wake up with that.
No.
It makes sense that I'm sticking around.
Yeah.
It no longer made sense for him, and that was his personal choice. Yeah. And it really did help me heal on that level.
No, there's... Yeah. And I think, like, that week that we spent in the SRO, like, I was physically, mentally, emotionally exhausted at the end of the week. And yet, all I kept thinking about is, I went home and I slept.
Right.
Even if it was 4 hours or whatever, yeah. I went home where it's quiet. There are no bed bugs. I am safe.
Yeah.
There is not somebody screaming in the room next door that you can't do anything about because they hold power over your floor because blah, blah, blah. So many dynamics. I was just, you know, I got to leave for 4 hours. And when I came back, I was just like, oh my God,
you never get
a break. You just don't get a break.
Like, and actually, I think I've talked to, there's an author who wrote a book about how he, it was his memoir, how he moved into, I think it's called, it's not Tent City, but it was in Toronto, outside of Toronto. And it's this whole area of land that at that point was not developed and was private land that was, and so people built sheds and shacks and stuff, and he went and lived there for a year amongst these people and documented it. He was also struggling with addiction and depression, and so and then he wrote a book about it and wrote a book about all the characters, and then at the very end that the land gets seized and they all get kicked off and they end up being rehomed, and a lot of them get rehomed to newly built fantastic co-op situations, shared living situations where they get their own little apartments, and the inability to heal from the trauma makes it so that even when you are in a small safe room, your brain has now adapted to being unsafe and vulnerable all the time, and those stressors change the chemistry of your brain. And he said if there was one, you know, we'd asked him, what do you think the main block is for people for getting off the street and for what is the thing for getting off drugs? And he said, by far, it's that humans are built to adapt to their environments. And when you are in constant stress and trauma and feeling unsafe and you don't know where your next
threat is going to come from.
Yeah. You're a different person, more than the drugs. You can get clean off the drugs, but your brain is now, and your body is now wired for that high stress. It's like, you don't even know how to cope anymore. And that really made an impact for me personally. When I see people on the street, I will never see them as their addiction anymore. I will never see them as their mental illness anymore. I legit just see a human who is under so much stress. Stress that I can't even comprehend.
Begin to understand that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I can't help them on that level. I'm raising a family and I've got a, like, you know, my own jobs and my own roles in my life, but I sure want to help the people that are helping them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the people that are made for that work or that just do it because they are compelled to for whatever reason. I just wanted to track back for a second because I immediately caught myself and then I wanted to,
correct yourself.
Yeah. Correct myself. When I say like, some women have uteruses and therefore some of them, there are also other ways to have children.
You don't
need to have a baby in your womb. You don't have to have a womb to have a child. And you also don't have to have a child to make a difference in a child's life. You can be an auntie or a friend or whatever, but I did feel like,
but also like, I mean, that's your experience of parenting as well. So that's probably where your thoughts went is like how you had
but
your
it's,
babies.
Yeah. And also like, what's the most common experience? And I also have to realize like, you know, I want to be inclusive of all experiences. And so I did want to just
correct yourself.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. But this is why I love the speaking form. That's why I love storytelling like this. Because when you write, it's set in stone.
And that's the other thing. And don't you think too, it's like, I mean, I'm a part of social media now. That's very, very much a part of the way I communicate with people. And I found that we are really hesitant to make connections with people where we have different beliefs. And so we are often talking to people who agree with us. Which is comfortable.
Case in point.
Yeah, 100%. I'm very aware of that. It's comfortable. When we have interactions with people who don't have the same experiences as us and therefore don't see the world the same way as we do, it's really easy to come from a place of judgment. And when you're communicating online, you would say things and maybe say things in perceived tones that you would never say to a human when you're communicating or hearing them speak when you're getting their tone, you're getting their intention.
Yeah, body language.
They're going to fuck up. Yeah. They're going to make mistakes, but you're getting like, oh, this, there's a good intention behind this, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I really, another reason why I think that communication is really important in this day and age, like honest, vulnerable communication.
So key.
Because we need to break through the barriers.
We really
do. We need to talk to people properly.
Yeah.
And we need to
relearn
that
just basic moment. Like you were saying, the gathering stuff. It's like if you go back into like Women Who Run with Wolves and like all these books that trace back to mythology and like the essence of community at the base of like how women interacted in this particular case with this book by, Women Who Run with Wolves.
Yeah.
Oh God, what's her name?
Wasn't it Naomi Klein? Klein?
No, it's
no, you're right.
Estes or something. It's like a three. It's in my room.
Give me a sec. Get it. And in that moment, I'm gonna try and remember the name of the hungry ghost.
Yeah.
Guy.
It is Clarissa Pinkola Estes. I knew it was.
That was not at all who I thought it was. There. Yeah.
Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Women Who Run with Wolves.
I read this so long ago.
So many times too. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. But yeah, she traces back all these myths about the wild woman archetype, and it forces you to sort of like think about, you know, this time that we used to spend sharing with each other face to face and telling each other stories and passing down information and knowledge and wisdom.
Mm.
And we don't do that anymore, and we think that we do because we're connected. But like, think of all the time. This is a stupid example, but it happened yesterday, so it's on the tip of my brain, but I texted my partner. He texted me something very sort of like loving and romantic and gloriously cheesy. And I am so not a romantic. So I was, but I really appreciated it. So I, of course, uncomfortably and awkwardly, I answered something like, ah, so corny.
Right.
Love you though. Yeah. And he read it as, oh, so corny.
Oh my gosh.
Love you though.
That's right.
And he was like, wow, no more expressions of love for you. And I was like, what? No, I was just being like, the tone was entirely wrongly read for someone who knows me very well.
And especially since he probably was being vulnerable.
And he was being vulnerable.
So he's already got his little like antenna out. Yeah.
And then I apologized for texting that. And then he apologized for being sensitive. And then we're both like, communication. And then I'm like, oh my God, we know each other. This is the person that I intimately know the best right now. And we still manage to misunderstand each other. So we need to really understand how easy that is to do while we depend on these forums and mediums of, you know, just complete breakdown in communication at all times. Yeah. There are so many more layers to like the forwards and periods that we send to each other, you know, like,
100%.
It's so forgotten that even if we're sitting across from each other, we may misunderstand each other, but then we have the opportunity to see that, oh, you moved away, or you looked away, or you got silent, or you're breathing differently. Like, all these little cues that you just don't have anymore.
I also think that when you're not in person, so let's give the example of, like, the classic, like, on social media when you get into a head-to-head with someone. It's been shown that if you have made three different attempts to prove a point or to communicate your point and it's been rebutted or refused, you aren't going to make a difference in that person's opinion. Yeah. So it's like, in theory, like if that is true, the only way really to move past our perceived, you know, separation,
incompatibilities,
from each other is to have real time conversation. And then you can talk about other things and connect in other ways. If you're not getting across on, say, like, for instance, if I was to have a conversation with a troll, and this has happened before, is, you know, like shutting down a comment about male privilege and white privilege. So he didn't see that this existed. He said, and I really tried. I put in 4 days of my life back and forth with him. Yeah. And then I just realized, I was like, oh, we're privately messaging. And I'm putting in all, I'm like, kids, hold on one second. And I'm not being present with my family so that I can change this guy's mind. No doubt if I had said, but how do you feel about Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Oh, we could have had a fantastic conversation about The Walking Dead. Then he would have seen me as someone that, by the way, I don't watch that show.
Yeah, it's just on
that show terrifies me. I can't even believe I used it. But like, on an, and find another point to connect on, because he would then get to know who I am as a person. He would see my intention isn't, you know, he called me a man-hater and all this stuff. He would get to know me in a different way. Yeah. But because we are limiting ourselves to these online platforms and this just barking opinions at each other, I feel like change isn't done there.
No. Right?
And that's why my mandate through the work that I do now is to bring in as many diverse experiences as, and lenses as possible, perspectives, because a lot of us don't, we've never sat down, or we don't have, you know, like real close friendships with someone like, for instance, my friend Aisha, who's Muslim.
Yeah.
Or my friend Jess, who's Indigenous. Mm-hmm. And just really asking and caring, like, what is it to move through the world like you? Because yeah. I bet you it's a little different than the way I move through the world.
Yeah.
And also, we have similar experiences too.
Yeah.
And so, if we can highlight those, I think that's the way we build more compassion and empathy, and that is a motivator for change.
Yeah.
If people care, they're not going to sit by idly.
No.
You know? They're going to advocate.
Yeah.
And I think that's more central now to my focus. Mm-hmm. And if it's through my parenting or through my relationship, you know, my husband has a lot of power. He's the whitest and strongest and most masculine, most successful in his arena. He can be an agent of change within the VFX community, for instance, the film community that he's in inviting more women to sit at the table, more identities to sit at the table with him. And that is, to me, like the it's like why I do what I do, right? And that's, to me, really exciting. It's while my kids are going to grow up and they're going to be change agents.
Yeah.
And the people that come to Grace Club, just by the, just by feeling included, just by feeling welcomed, like there's a community that cares, that is really healing for a lot of women. We've had women come that have been in tears, that have said, one person said, I don't tell anyone I come to these because it's not acceptable in my community. Another woman said her girlfriends mocked her for going to a feminist event. So, like, that to me is shocking.
Yeah.
I'm like, how could you, how could there be people in the world still that don't feel like this is the reason why we have feminism?
Yeah.
That there's a value here in this. But again, I'm in my own little bubble.
But that's the thing. You know, there's, I think it's really interesting because we keep references that I always, and I always parallel it to, like, the, you know, the people that ask you why you do things when you do things that they don't do.
Yeah.
And it's either, like, I'm thinking of people who are, like, way further along the path than you of, like, oh, why don't you do more? Or, like, that's just baseline, or that's light, or 101. And it's like, well, it starts somewhere, first of all. So while for us, you know, repeating these conversations or sitting on this couch, you and I having this conversation where we agree both on the things that we knew we were going to agree and we just agreed for an hour.
Yeah.
It, that's not the point. The point isn't you and me talking. It's those people that show up and said, fuck, I came, and then like I got either shamed or I didn't tell anyone. That's the point. That's where it makes a difference. And then, you know, on the base level and on the further level, why aren't you doing more? It's like, well, you know, to each their own. Like if, I have the tools to do, when I have the tools to do more, I will do more.
Yeah.
Right now, my tools are such and such, and, you know, I see the difference. And when it stops making a difference, when everyone is comfortable, then we'll have to change.
Sure, yeah.
But right now, it's not the case. Like, let's stop assuming that we're just a bunch of people who already agree showed up, you know?
And I do think we all are operating from our own level of awareness, right? And so I'm speaking to me what feels like truth right now. But don't think that 6 months ago, I'm not embarrassed about shit that I said then.
Yeah.
I'm always evolving.
Yeah.
And at the same time, if I was going to try to pretend that I'm on some really elevated activist level, I wouldn't be being true and authentic. And that's a really strong value of mine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm only going to speak from where I'm at.
Yeah.
And because of that, I'll bring along my community for with me along for the ride. And but I don't love, in fact, I do break out in like full body rashes when I do try to appropriate or come from a place where I'm not yet.
Yeah.
I really have to understand it in my bones first.
Yeah.
And even this conversation, like every time I have a conversation around feminism, I always get more and more strong in my
verbalization of it.
Yeah, and just my belief of it. Like, it really does make... It's not for nothing that we have these conversations, even if we do agree, because it does reaffirm that, like, no, this is important. And this is coming from my essence. Like, this is who I am now. Mm-hmm. A year ago, I was not where I am right now.
Exactly.
And 2 years ago, I was absolutely not. And
I say in the book, there is a line, I don't call myself a feminist. It's in my freaking book. I didn't take it out. I left it there on purpose because I didn't.
Yeah.
In my early 20s, I was taught first, second wave feminism, and I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. It wasn't my world. Mm. I wanted to take advantage of my femininity. I wanted to be proud of my sexuality. Those feminisms did not allow for that.
Yeah.
Therefore, I didn't identify with it.
Yeah.
But the problem wasn't with me and feminism. The problem was with the definitions that I was aware of.
Yeah.
And that were offered to me, and my perception of my, you know, access
to
it.
I'm right there with you.
Right?
Like my first exposure to feminism as a movement was going to a yoga and feminism workshop. It was an 8-week series with Shani, who was one of our first speakers, and she asked the room, who here identifies as a feminist? And I was the only person not to put up my hand in a room of, like, I think there were like 15 of us. And so she said, okay, Maggie, like, can you share with us why you don't identify as a feminist? And I'm not kidding, we laugh about this now, but my honest response was, because I'm the main child, like, I'm the main guardian and carer of my children, so I lead a traditional role.
Yeah.
And I like to have I like pedicures.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know you were allowed to
be in the female stereotype to enjoy it.
Yeah. Like, I my crude idea of feminism was you have
to rebel,
hairy legs, wear Birkenstocks, burn your bra, and fuck the man.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so, and I had come from my home in an argument with my husband about me working, quote unquote. And I don't mean like he wasn't saying I wasn't allowed to work. He called me going to yoga to teach work.
Yeah.
I called it work. And he was like, oh, yoga's work now? And we got in this fucking brutal argument about, like, of course it's work. I get paid for it and I do it.
Yeah.
And that's my work. And he minimized my work. And so I was arriving in the space of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Like, just like, I'm in a traditional marriage with a guy who just questioned whether my work is valid. Like, how could I be a feminist? And she just was like, okay, but
that's actually feminism.
Right? She's like, so here's the deal. Do you believe in equal rights for women, for all?
Yeah.
And I was like, absolutely. She's like, that's feminism. So... Can we get a raised hand? I was like, oh fuck, I got schooled.
Yeah.
But I did. I also had that misperception that feminists were like, and in the beginning of feminism, it was like all about men and women to me, right? Equality, equanimity. If you even went so far, even though I didn't know about that yet. And then I didn't realize, like, oh, how about, okay, what do I want the same rights and freedoms and privileges as men? Absolutely. All men? Well, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Would I take my white privilege over maybe being an Indigenous man or a poor person in Vancouver? So I have my benefit. There are benefits to being a white woman. There are benefits to being a middle class person.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't trade for the world, right? Yeah. And so it's like, do I believe that everyone should have equal rights? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
That's feminism.
Yeah,
that's the feminism I'm fighting for now. It's not what I always knew to be the case.
No.
You know?
No, and this is the thing
that's... And it's always evolving, too. Like, the movements evolve as much as our awareness does.
Absolutely. And this is the thing, like, at the beginning of this podcast, or, like, in the middle, this is, like, one of the many episodes where we talk about feminism, and every conversation is different. And for me, it was really, like, if you listen to some of the first episodes, and I don't want to because that's going to be cringy, but, like, you know, like, if I did right now, I'd be like, oh, God, no, those are not the words that you should use. But those are the words that I had. This is the process. This is the point of having.
And
like,
if you're not cringing,
then you're not learning.
Then you're not learning. Like, I will be embarrassed at some point over what has come out of my mouth over the years.
That's the point.
Yeah, even the way I address people at Grace Club, we constantly, hey guys, thanks for being here, guys. oh, you guys. And so, okay, hold on. What's wrong with that? Well, what if I was talking to a room of all men?
Yeah.
And there was one woman in the room. Can I say, hey, ladies. Thanks, yeah. ladies. Great, girls. Great work. No, they would be offended. Yeah. Now, why would they be offended? Because to be called a woman or yeah. a lady or a girl, if you're a man, is an insult.
Yeah.
And so why are we happy to be acknowledged as guys?
Yeah.
Like, let's create a yeah. playing field. Also, gender non-conforming people,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what yeah. someone's gender is based on how they look. Yeah, gender yeah. is an inside thing.
Yeah.
So maybe they're constantly being misgendered all day long mm-hmm. as men, and they're not. Yeah. And so when they come to Grace Club and they're, hey guys, thanks guys.
Fuck,
and it's just one more.
Yeah.
So, and also, what's wrong with like, hey friends? Yeah. I actually was like, people. Hey, we should bring back y'all.
Yeah.
Like back in the Britney days or whatever. Like, hey y'all.
Yeah. yeah.
We should bring it back because it is the most inclusive, you all.
Yeah.
Right? Like everyone here.
Yeah.
And again, if you're not like, you know, hitting your forehead, the palm of your hand based on what you used to say, mm-hmm. then you aren't evolving. And if you do listen to or go back to mm-hmm. those early episodes, you'll be able to track your growth, which yeah. is also kind of cool.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah. And I think it's also, that's the thing, it'll be the same with your Grace Club events. It'll be sure. like, oh my God, remember when this needed to be addressed?
When we had an all-white panel? Like, embarrassing. It's embarrassing to me that we had an all-white panel, even though one of them was LGBTQ, one of them yeah. was a bigger-bodied person. I can't, it's cringy to me. And it's because now that's the other thing that's changed is that now I can't not notice
when other
people are doing it. I can't not.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend text me yesterday saying they're doing which I will connect you with, because they're doing a podcast forum.
Ooh.
So they want all podcasters to like come together and network yes. and share. They can't find any people of color doing podcasts in Vancouver.
I've struggled to get any representation on. Obviously, there's a lot of women on my podcast, way more than men.
Yeah.
But I can count on my hands the number of visible minorities.
Yeah.
I can count on my hands. No, actually, I still have yet to have someone who doesn't identify as man or woman.
Yeah.
I've
got someone for you.
I know, I do too.
Yeah, I've got a
Haley,
really...
where this is Wink Wink. I know you listen to them,
hey.
So
hey.
Come and chat.
Haley, and also Jesse Nelson, who just did a mm-hmm. Grace Lab workshop for us on Thursday, identifies as gender neutral, they, them pronouns,
yep.
And probably is the most charming human being you'll ever meet. Just so much fun. So much fun. And actually, you can listen. I'll hook you up so you can have them on.
But what I mean is, you know, this is exactly the point. We can cite them. There's two of them.
Yep.
You know?
Like, yep.
Or
And they're not supposed to talk for all of their community. That's the other thing.
No.
Is like when you ask people of visible or even invisible,
minority groups
to speak or to share.
It's not on behalf of all of them.
Yeah, and that was a learning for me too. Back in the day when I was, you know, it was like, oh, am I tokenizing this person
mm-hmm.
because they identify as a First Nation,
yeah.
part of the First Nations in Vancouver? Like, that's not good enough. I need to actually be interested in their personal story.
Yeah.
And that's hard,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I have to be really honest when I am reaching out to people that this is our mandate.
Yeah.
And so,
I had an episode with Lucy Segu on black feminism
mm.
where she essentially spent the last 20 minutes being like schooling me about white supremacy, and I was just sitting on my couch dying. I was like, this is why I do it. I'm dying here
yeah.
of shame of all the wrong things I've said, but you know.
Yeah. But that's
she
how
she was
learn.
Telling me her story, and her story is one of suffering white supremacy.
Yeah.
And my guilt and shame was like,
I didn't know.
Totally adequate.
I didn't know we were in a white supremacist nation and a colonist culture
yeah.
and all that stuff too. It's mind blowing
you're just like, of course.
Well, somebody
obviously.
Somebody said at the workshop on Thursday, we were doing a diversity and inclusion workshop, and someone said that it was described to them as a fish in water. For the first time being
realizing
told
that you're in water.
You're a fish and you're in water.
Yeah.
Like until you're actually your awareness is there, you have no idea. Like
mm-hmm.
you've been immersed in water. This is water all around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that. It's been like that for a lot of the people I know who are white. And, you know, like the fact that Canada celebrated its birthday of 150 years old. Canada is not 150 years old. Colonization is. Is that something that
we want to celebrate?
That's worth celebrating. And how offensive and traumatic is that for the people that
we're here in the first place?
And so, like, just those things, like, mind-blowing, right? For people that are like, oh, no, this is always the way it is, though. It's like, nope, this is genocide. We are active participants, and we're celebrating it. That's a bit weird, don't you think?
Yeah.
Right? Mind blown.
Yeah.
Again, these are the awarenesses that I'm so compassionate when people don't know.
Have them yet, yeah.
Because, I mean, you don't know until you know.
You can't expect people to have done the work that you have done.
Yeah.
That's unfair.
Here's the quote. Here's the quote of all quotes. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
This is going to be the closer.
Oh, it's perfect. I love it.
And it's it addresses our own unconscious bias in that our belief that our experience is everybody else's, and that therefore people should think and feel and behave in the same way that we do.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you should know about me is that I'm not you. A lot more will make sense after that.
Yeah.
And if you can look at the world that way, you can't not have more tolerance and more understanding. Just that I'm not you and you're not me. And so let's acknowledge that and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
We'll go from there. But to expect everyone to be where we're at and vice versa, it's unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And to expect us to know who's where.
Yeah.
And understand which, you know, you might be very far along on one path of learning and very new to a different one. And that doesn't make it better or lesser or greater than the other, you know?
Sure.
So, I think that to anyone who is sort of dubious or cautious about, you know, the value of storytelling or the value of community, be like, just try it. Mm-hmm. try it before you're discounted.
You'll be hooked.
And then conversely also, you know, if there are better, wiser, more effective ways of change, we're open, you know, we're here.
Like, yeah, that's key, really, is just being open.
Yeah.
I hear you. I hear you, sister.
Yay. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And
thank you for having me.
Words of wisdom.
Thanks for having me on. I love conversation. So this is just perfect. Yeah, great way to spend the afternoon.
Absolutely. Yeah. You guys, I'll be posting all of the links in the description, and make sure to check out Grace Club's events and Grace Club Lab coming up, which we haven't discussed, but I will link all the stuff to it. And as per usual, please subscribe, like, follow, applaud, all that crap that is so, so very necessary for us to keep having these conversations. And you know, if you're bored, buy my book and stuff.
and follow Grace Club YVR on social media.
It'll be down there.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Have a great Friday and enjoy your weekend. Bye. You know, man.